You're listening to Rosie Cole's Vaudeville Broadcast. This program may contain adult content, so if you're under 18, please either get permission or switch it off. Welcome, podcast listeners, performance fans, to yet another episode of Rosie Cole's Vaudeville Broadcast. And today I am with a longtime friend and I would say somewhat mentor of the cabaret circuit, Little Lady Luscious, or it's okay if I call you Em, right? Yeah, or Em. So, Em, what is it that you do for people who have not had the pleasure of meeting you yet?
I am a burlesque performer. I am also a burlesque teacher and I also produce cabaret nights.
Yes, and we've actually co-produced.
Yes, and we have
a couple actually. Yes. A couple of nights. Yes. And they were really, really fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you say this is a pretty recent-ish development in your life? Kind of burlesque and cabaret?
Yes, as I am 34. So, and I took up burlesque when I was it 29 or 28? 2008. So 2008 was when I took up burlesque. So in the grand scheme of things, like, it's not been a long time, but in recent years, yes. Yeah. 6 years is nearly, that's a long time.
It's a decent amount of time to be getting your boobs out on stage.
Yes. Well, it all started as a hobby, so I suppose all these things do. I wanted to get back into doing a form of dance because I used to do ballet when I was younger, and the class on offer was burlesque. Didn't really know an awful lot about it, so did it and loved it and did another 3 courses in it.
Amazing. Yeah. So you did ballet when you were younger. Is that where your sort of entry into the performing arts world started?
Not really. Sort of, yes. Because, you know, doing the children's shows all the way up until I was about 17, 18. And then when it came to the choice of what to do after A-levels, I went into stage management. I did that at university, went to a place called Bretton Hall, which is West Yorkshire Sculpture Park. The Leeds took over. You don't really need to know this, but Leeds took over. It no longer exists, basically, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I think Gemma Layton mentioned this in the podcast episode with her. She was talking about she went to Bretton Hall as well, and now that doesn't exist.
Yes. So she was in the year above me, so that's how I know Gemma Layton.
That's cool.
And how Gemma Layton came to host quite a few shows for me.
So glad she did. She's brilliant.
Yes, she's very good. I was very pleased when she did her first hosting. She was brilliant, so when I asked her to do it again, she was fine, and she loved doing the shows too, so that made it even better.
So how did you make the leap from ballet to stage management? Because one involves tutus and point shoes, and the other one involves steel-toe cat boots and wrenches and ladders.
And the like. Well, basically, I suppose if you're not taken up to be a ballerina by the age of 12, it might not be that young. You kind of look at what's the best option out of that, and my decision was going backstage because there was absolutely no way I could talk in front of people. I'm not a public speaker, shall we say. I'm fine in classes. Classes is brilliant.
You're pretty good at drawing a raffle.
Yes, drawing a raffle. Front of house, telling people to get their ass into the show. Very good at that, shouting those sort of things out. But when it comes to a full kind of speech, acting was not the thing for me at all. I'm very happy with dancing. I met a wonderful comedian while I was learning burlesque in New Zealand by the name of Diane Spencer. She's on the comedy circuit. Go see her. She's brilliant. We have a very different way. So she's absolutely fine standing up and telling jokes and, you know, saying all manner of things in front of people. And then when it comes to taking her clothes off on stage, not a chance. The thought petrifies her. So, and then I'm the other way. So we kind of had quite a nice friendship through that realization. So I helped, and which is, I suppose, my first interaction with teaching, was helping her develop a burlesque routine for the course that we were doing together.
Oh, brilliant.
She basically cornered me and made me do it. And I'm very thankful for that.
I want to know a little bit more about growing up as and doing ballet, and then did you continue with ballet when you moved to university, or?
Not particularly, not classes wise, because I suppose alcohol took over, and being and also the course that I was doing, we pretty much stage managed every show that went on for each year at the uni. So your time kind of wasn't really, it was all over the place.
Oh my god, anyone who has ever been a stage manager would be like, yeah, you have no life. Yeah. First one's in, last one's to leave.
Well, exactly, and then some, it depended if you were deputy stage managing, because you'd then have to be in rehearsals. We even used to tech as well, because even though there was a lighting and sound course, they wouldn't tend to tech the shows. They would do the design work, but then we'd operate it.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So we were generally the dog's body.
I have to say, it's degree. Pretty much what it's like in the industry. Yeah. So. As I'm sure you know.
Yeah, so I kind of fell out of classes, but I did always take my pointe shoes everywhere with me. They travelled with me to Australia. They've travelled with me, generally all over the place. Just in case I ever was able to again. And so taking up burlesque, I started wearing more heels, which is something I never used to wear an awful lot. And so it's then opened the door for me to put the pointe shoes back on and start choreographing with ballet in mind.
That's so lovely. Did you enjoy stage management at uni?
Yes, I did. But then I think when it came out into the real world, I still enjoyed it, but I always felt that I wasn't pushing myself. It wasn't really thing for me. I suppose at university you're in a nice little bubble, and you're just with your friends and you're working on shows with this, that and the other. The real world, it was tough, and I got quite a bit of work, and I worked at one of my favourite theatres, and that job I absolutely loved.
Which one was it?
The Newcastle Theatre Royal. It's a beautiful, beautiful theatre, and on Grey Street in Newcastle, which was voted like one of the prettiest streets in the UK. I worked there for a couple of years as casual crew and lighting, which was kind of very random because I wasn't really a major lighting person. it was the electrics, because I sometimes worked on sound. But that was great. I absolutely loved and adored working there, because when I was younger, I used to go to the theatre there. I used to go and see shows an awful lot with my mum. That's where I used to go to ballet a lot, to see them with my mum. I used to see, like, the RSC, because they used to do a month-long... what's the word? Month-long run at Newcastle. So I used to go and see quite a few Shakespeare plays and just whatever was on. So it was like one of those things that I always wanted to work there. And when I worked there and found out how lovely the crew are and how just lovely everybody who works there. There was two who weren't, but you always have those.
there's always a couple in every bunch.
But they were lovely. So that was one of my favourite places to work.
Do you have any memories that particularly stand out for you?
Losing my mind during pantomime. And I suppose just all clubbing together. Speaking of panto, I don't know if this can go on the podcast, but we'll find out. I worked on Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. I'd been to Anne Summers just before the show, and I couldn't find what I was looking for, and I went and had a drink with one of my friends in the pub beforehand. these were the days where you could have a drink before work. and before work, I mean like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So it was just a quick one because my friend, he was toasting the birth of his daughter. I was in there bitching about how I couldn't find what I wanted. A couple of the dwarves came in. It was Little Jay and Phil came in. Little Jay and Phil came in and they sat next to us. And they were like, obviously listening intently as to what I was saying. And then after, so we went off into work. And then we got drawn for Secret Santa. And my friend Stu, who was in the pub with us, walked past me after it all been drawn. He's like, "I know who's got you, and I know what you're getting." And he was like, "Okay." So slight panic. And it's the way that he said it. And then as things started getting put into the green room after that of like what a presence, there was mine kind of going. And pretty much throughout the week running up to when everybody got their Secret Santa presents, there was a fair few rumours going on about me and about my present that I was getting. So there was quite a lot of interest when it came to, we were in the green room and everybody was passing around the presents, and there was quite a bit of interest when I was handed mine. Everyone was like, "Wait, Emily's got hers!" Stop. Okay. The card said, "I hope you have a very pleasurable Christmas."
Oh God.
On opening, I was given a Rampant Rabbit Platinum. And it was Phil who had picked my name out of the drawer. Apparently, he didn't go to Ann Summers himself. He'd sent one of the cleaners to go. But yes, so I worked on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and got given a vibrator.
It's not a bad vibrator either. Platinum, that's not bad.
Exactly.
Not the Christmas present we all expect from our work colleagues, but can you imagine in the office, Secret Santa?
Exactly. I frightened the life out of Leslie Joseph with it, because we then put the batteries in it and I was showing everybody what it did. It's like, oh, I've seen what I got from it.
So some great experiences in stage management in Newcastle.
Yeah.
So how long were you stage managing for?
Well, after I left Theatre Royal, I then went to Harrow Art Centre and worked as a technical stage manager there. And then I was picked up by Tall Stories Theatre Company and worked in children's theatre for a while. And they do the Gruffalo. Before Ken Wright bought it. But mm-hmm. I worked for them doing one of their shows called The Snow Dragon, mm-hmm. Which then meant I went on tour in the States for that as well.
Oh,
which
wow.
Was, yeah, which okay. was amazing.
That's great. How long were you touring for?
For in the States, I think it was only about, 3 months. And then overall, it was like on and off the snow, because it was, because it's a children's theatre thing, it's normally just weekends and half terms that you get a lot of touring with it. So I did that, learnt how to drive a Ford long wheelbase white transit van, which used to fall to pieces and break down all the time.
You are not my image of a white van driver.
No, I'm 4'11", but yeah.
Exactly, I was going to say, because like people may not know you. You're quite a tiny lady.
Yes, I am. And yeah, it was quite good because like you get to see you see a lot more from a white transit van.
Yeah.
A better view of the road. So yeah. There was a time where I was like, the only time I'd drive in London was in a van, because I could see where I was going. Like in a car, I just felt like I couldn't see. You can't see far enough ahead when you're trying to get round London.
Yeah.
Like it's just a nightmare. And plus in a van, if you take over two lanes, nobody will argue with you. First time I did, I had a co-pilot, my friend Debbie, So she was blonde, blue hair, eyed, big tits, and it's me, brunette, in the driving seat. And the amount of honked horns, like, of other van drivers while we were driving round. And we got let out quite a lot. So there's something to be said to be female and driving a white van.
Get preferential treatment.
Yes.
Nice
it's
one.
All right. Yeah.
Nice one.
Well, that was the only reason why. But yeah, I totally agree with the, yes. James Seabright was one of the companies that I worked for, stage managing. And I worked for him up at the Edinburgh Festival twice. Festival Highlights is the company he does there, and he is Seabright Productions. Yeah, he paid for everyone else to go up on the train, and then, yes, I got the wonderful job of driving it. I was like, will you drive the van? The second year it was a Luton. That was ridiculous.
But I've heard just now some of the good memories from stage management. So what made you want to leave?
What made me want to leave? Well, I think there was a combination of things. I think I just, I'd had enough. I didn't feel like I was doing anything creative. And also I think it was just a time to kind of like, I wanted to do something new. And I have a very... very up and down history with theatre anyway, of like, I'll have moments of like, that's it, I'm not doing this anymore. I did actually say that after I finished university. No, I'm not doing that.
I think that's quite a stage manager feeling though, because yeah. Like the stage manager is pretty much, we used to joke that SM stood for stage mum,
yeah.
Where you'd be in charge of everything and take care of everything and then get like none of the credit.
Yeah.
And just have to deal with all the mess.
Yeah, it was generally, there was a lot of that, of just dealing with the mess, and touring didn't suit me because you had to, it's like every 3 days or every few days or every week moving, and even though I'm quite a transient person, it was just a bit much living out of a rucksack for so long.
And also if you're moving a show... every 3 days, you're getting into the venue, you're building your set, you're putting everything up, you're plotting your lights, you're doing all the technical, I was about to say boring tech stuff, because like I find it boring.
Yeah.
And then you get to run the show a couple of times, and then 2 days later you're pulling it all down and yeah. Moving on and having to do it again. It's really intense.
Before I gave up, it was I did a 6 month tour, which was pretty much that. And you don't know where you're staying, so you're in digs from time to time. And there was obviously good points to it, but I think I wanted to settle. And by settle, I decided to get on a plane to New Zealand. yeah. Hence the transient, but I still want, yeah. So yeah, I went over to New Zealand to do my working holiday visa.
You're doing this really intense tour with stage management, and it just got overwhelming, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, so what made you choose New Zealand?
Well, I'd always wanted to do New Zealand. I'd already done my working holiday visa in Australia. Now, I say I was getting on a plane to New Zealand. Technically, that's not right. I was actually getting on a plane to go to Australia again. For a man, he was Australian, he was in the Navy. Long story short, I met him in India.
Wait, what? That's not long story short. That's okay. Oh, he was in the Navy, I met him in India. Yeah. Anyway.
I met him in India at his sister's wedding, and we had like a week long kind of romance, and so the decision was, I'll go see how it goes with him, and if it doesn't go well, I'll go on to New Zealand. If it goes well, well, we'll work on it. We'll go from there. It didn't go well. Went to New Zealand. But I had always sort of wanted to do New Zealand beforehand. It's that since I started going travelling, it was on the agenda at some point. And as Australia, New Zealand and Canada are quite available to UK residents to do a working holiday visa before they're 30.
Oh, yes, it's that whole Commonwealth countries kind of thing, isn't it?
And, 30 was coming quite soon. So I took it and thought, yeah, let's go. And yeah, and I say I ended up being there for 2 years, which is good. I did really want to stay, but 2008 was when the crash happened, and yeah, it just, they kind of closed down their borders a bit, so it would have meant hiring a visa agent to stay.
Right. What were you doing in New Zealand while you were out there? Because obviously you say it's working holiday, so what were you doing to sort of live?
Yeah, I was working for a shipping company, International Removals.
So nothing to do with performance, theatre, anything?
At all. No, not at all. I was working for a crazy lady called Sarah, who ran her own business, and she was brilliant. Absolutely loved working with Sarah and Kathy. And yeah, it was good fun. It actually brought home to me the fact that you can still have fun and work, you know, even if the job isn't creative, but then you find ways to be creative. I best not go into that.
Oh, no. Oh, no, please go into that.
Well, we were creative in what we had to do to get things through customs and all the rest.
Oh, right, that kind of creative. Yes. I thought you just meant like wacky antics in the office, but this is actually like creative international creative shipping laws.
Yeah, creative paperwork.
Right, so it's pulling on your like logistics. Yeah. And management skills, yes. But also some of your creativity.
Yes, just getting it out. So yeah, so then I went down, so I worked there, and it was while I was working there that I found the burlesque classes.
Oh, how did you find them?
It was a mixture of looking for a dance classes to do, and then an ad in the local paper. Well, not an ad, it was an interview in the local paper.
Oh, cool.
With my teacher, Erin Buster, who teaches in Reno. She moved about 6 months after I left and moved back to the UK. She moved back to the States, because mm-hmm. that's where she's from. And my friend Tracy, who, Misty Lamour, who started at the same time as me, she then she's taken over classes. So they're still running in New Zealand. Under the tuition of Misty Lamour and Tracy Moore. He's very lovely and from the northeast too.
What was it about burlesque that particularly caught your attention? Coming from ballet, which a lot of people see as very high art form and very like elegant and refined, and people often see burlesque as quite a low art form, what drew you to it?
The performance. Getting the opportunity to perform at the end and choreograph my own routine. That was something that I always wanted to do when I was younger, and always, I suppose I never had a lot of confidence in myself and in my abilities, which is again another reason I think that I didn't feel quite right all the time that I was stage managing, because I didn't really feel very confident in what I was doing and how I was doing it. As it turns out, just blagging is just the way that you're meant to do it.
I get that feeling too. I get that feeling where like you feel like you're not doing it very well, and that someone's going to call you out, like you've got this imposter sort of feeling the whole time. Mm. And then afterwards people come up to you and they're like, that was so good, you're such a good blah blah blah, and you're like, what? Okay, thank you. And you don't say, oh really, because I was shitting my pants the whole time. No, yeah. You never say that, but
oh, half the time I do, I'm very honest.
This is true.
Oh, yeah. Fine. But yeah, so it was down to so it was just the appeal of performing at the end of it really drew me to it. And being able to make up your own routine was just, yeah, that really just took me, really drew me to it, and that's how I sign up.
Not get to choreograph your own stuff in ballet at all? You didn't get to do your own?
No, it was it was through grades. I was up to elementary, and in ballet, you're choreographed for the end of show display, so it's never an opportunity. And plus, I was always coming because I was slightly stockier than the other girls. I always got cast as a boy.
Oh.
Occasionally a girl, but there was one particularly which I was a gollywog.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
That's not okay. It's one of those things you look back and you're like, oh dear God.
Yeah. My ballet teacher was amazing. She was brilliant. Like, she'd have everything. The set would be like, health and safety wouldn't pass how she used to set the set up. Like, basically. So, it was all very much slapdash and thrown together. So, yeah. I suppose that's where I got, maybe that's part of how I get a bit slapdash, and I like, let's just do that. If it looks okay from the front, it's fine.
I think that's a theatre attitude. Yes. That's pretty much all performance attitude.
Yeah.
It's like, if it looks good from the front, no one cares.
Yes. As long as it doesn't fall down during the show, it'll be fine.
During the show, that's it. After the show, no one gives a shit. Yes. If it falls down, half our work is done. But yeah. After the show, the get out's almost done.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you started taking burlesque classes, it's so funny that you say you feel like you didn't have much confidence in your abilities, because to be a stage manager and to be a performer, you do have to at least appear confident.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I have friends who say that I'm super confident, which is mainly because, like, I don't think about, like, getting on a plane to go somewhere on my own. Like, that's fine. Go travelling and things like that, not a problem. But I think everybody questions themselves. There's you're always going to, whatever you do. And it's whether you listen to that side of yourself or not. And at that time, I was listening to that side of myself. So, but burlesque was done a great thing because I don't listen to that side of myself as much. I would say I completely ignore it, but yeah, I think the past few years have been a very interesting transition for me, from having that wonderful high and having that wonderful enjoyment of living in New Zealand and performing out there, and 100% on an amateur basis. And then coming back to London and finding that everybody takes everything very seriously over here.
This is something I've heard from other performers, yeah. Like, London is intense.
Yeah. And just really trying to find that level over here, of the enjoyment factor, of just that, you know, trying not to take it seriously, because I see when I take it too seriously, that's when I get myself into a state, and that's when I think that it's not going to work. And then when I just focus on the, I'm just going to enjoy this, that seems to be when it does work, and seems to be when things start to take shape.
Oh yeah, what was your first burlesque performance like? How was it? And that was in New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
How long had you been learning for?
5 weeks.
And then you did a show?
Yes. The course was usually 6 weeks, but I joined at a week after it started. So, yes, after 5 weeks, I did a show. Yeah, it was brilliant. I did 2 Sweet About Me. And... yeah, it was all in white. It was quite funny. Anyway, we won't tell about that. so it was really kind of playing, which is what I tell my girls when I teach them, is playing to the side that you feel confident with when you do your first performance. So, like, I would never have done a full ballet performance on my first one like I do now. So it was just a basic tease, a routine. There was no major character. Well, there was character, but it wasn't hadn't chosen a cleaner or like a librarian or anything like that. But the character was pretty much myself, of I look all sweet and innocent, but really underneath it all. I quite like to get the kit off. Quite basically. So it was used, and the song Sweet About Me, There's Nothing Sweet About Me. Yeah, it was perfect. Perfect marriage, really. I'd brought a dress with me from the UK because a friend of mine was due to get married in Australia while I was traveling, so I knew I'd be able to go to her wedding. So I had this dress, which I didn't. That's another story. Anyway, so I had that dress, and then so I basically pretty much had the outfit ready. So it was kind of quite nice to come out looking all kind of posh and demure, and then underneath it all, it was like stockings and suspenders.
Cute.
Yeah. So it's quite nice. And my teacher over there she's the conservative side of burlesque. So when she taught, she didn't teach pasties, she didn't teach tassel twirling. She was very much from the outset, this is kind of the Disney side of burlesque. That it's just down to bra and knickers. She didn't want anyone taking or revealing any more than that. Which, you know, I stand by that to be, I think that was a great way to teach, because the people who weren't as confident didn't feel that they had to do too much.
Yeah, it's kind of swimwear level.
Yes.
You didn't have to go any further than that if you didn't want to, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that made me feel comfortable, for my first time. And then, since then, of course, I've moved on and done pasties and done tassels. So it, for a beginner and for somebody who wants to just do it at an amateur level, that was a very encouraging and a good class to go to. So then the night of the performance as well, it was just wonderful because the camaraderie backstage and things like that, I really enjoyed that. And that's something that I try to bring to my students when I teach them, is that the camaraderie backstage, so that they all get to, you know, that they get to look after each other and enjoy the night. That's my aim, is to make sure that when they do their showcase that they enjoy the night.
Yeah. So was it when you moved back to London that you, obviously you'd been learning for like 2 years in New Zealand and improving and getting better and enjoying yourself on an amateur level. Mm. Was it when you moved back to London that you wanted to start performing professionally? What was the move there?
Yeah, it was. I signed up to a burlesque course because I really missed classes. So I signed up to a course. Yeah, and you just kind of get swept up in it in the end, a little bit. And so I started doing other gigs. Then I started sort of developing my own thing. I suppose they're going, learning a bit more about myself and what I wanted to do, which is then where I dusted off the pointe shoes and got those back out. And since I've started concentrating on that aspect of myself, I've started doing a bit more on the gigging side. Yeah, really sort of enjoying it again, and enjoying, I recently did Best of Burlesque up at Edinburgh, and I was wonderful to do it there. It was, it really sort of gave me encouragement again to keep doing my own thing as well as the teaching, because the audience were amazing, and the stage was amazing too, because pointe shoes and cabaret.
It's an interesting combination.
Yes, it's. I have turned up to a few gigs and go, you did watch my video, didn't you? You did see that I'll be dancing on point. So that stage there, it's not. It was kind of like a picnic table. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, I always take my flats with me just in case. So, yeah, and then they gave me another, there was one where there was a hole in the middle of the stage.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
What do you mean by a hole?
It was just a big hole.
In the middle of the stage?
Yes. So I had to kind of re-choreograph so that I didn't. So normally where I go diagonally, I didn't.
Otherwise you would fall in the hole. Oh,
yes, exactly.
Oh my God, how big was it?
It wasn't that big. It was quite small. Oh, the hole. The hole itself was big, but the stage wasn't that big.
So like half the stage was just a hole. We'll talk about this in a second. Yeah. About like producing.
Yeah. So I get a very, because people don't think about doing burlesque, they think, oh, you're in heels, you can walk around, it's fine. But when you're doing, if you're doing something a bit more ballet based, then you do need a kind of flat stage. Because the other problem with that I've encountered is actually glitter.
Yes, it's slippy.
I did, when I landed, I slipped, and luckily there was something behind me to catch. So I didn't go all the way, slipping all the way back. It's always asking them to make sure that they sweep the stage after somebody who's had a lot of glitter.
Which in burlesque is...
Yeah.
Everyone.
Which is everyone, yes. So I always try to recommend that I get put early on in the lineup, mainly because of that reason, because it's a lot easier.
So how did you make the jump from performing to producing?
Well, it's something that I'd always wanted to do. As well as be, like, during being a stage manager, half the time you spent bitching about your producer. Everyone does it.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
That you could do it 10 times better. I'm not sure if I can, but... Another thing of not having the kind of confidence to go out and do aim high when I was younger. So I gave it a go. The show went well. And so it's just been going from there, really. Various ups and downs, but you know, that's all part and parcel. And hopefully the next one, it'll be brilliant. It's I'm very excited about it. I've got a fantastic short to open the show and to close the show.
Oh yeah, you made a film.
Yes, we made a film.
And there's a little interval.
Yes.
Film to go. It's like a film in three parts to show throughout the evening.
Yes. So I'm very, very excited about that.
I've heard very good things about this.
It looks brilliant. So the six shows are film noir inspired. So the film that we shot is has a very film noir look. And we have our own private detective, who's fabulous, a very wonderful actor, George Colley. Couldn't remember his last name then. Who is brilliant, and he's been wonderful. And the wonderful Matthew Lum of Plainview Media filmed it. He is fantastic. So if you need anything filming, get in touch with him.
So exciting.
Very exciting.
I think there is a little teaser trailer still available.
Yes, there is.
To see on the, is it Luscious Cabaret Facebook page, you can see it?
You can see it on the Facebook page, you can see it on my website. Mm-hmm. I think it's on there. Yes, it is on there, under Luscious Cabaret. And it's also on Little Lady Luscious's Facebook as well.
Amazing.
So it's everywhere. I need to keep, yes, I'm going to start plugging that a bit more. So the first show will be the 3rd of October. So we've had a fantastic run with a Kickstarter, so we have enough money to kind of guarantee fees for performers, which I'm very particular about. That's something that I've always wanted to get to, and I've always had to offer door split, and I think only once was I able to offer a reasonable fee.
So on your producing journey, you've gone from the Cavendish Arms in Stockwell, which was like your first producing, almost like a training ground, I guess, which is where I met you.
The Cavendish Arms is brilliant. Lovely little space. Beautiful.
It's been referenced a lot of times on this podcast. It's like a place that brings people together.
Yes. it's a beautiful little space. So when I walked through the door and looked at it, I was like, yes, I want to be here. Yes, this is where I shall do my shows. It is mainly for comedy and for bands, which means that it does have a good sound system. Overall, brilliant. I met some wonderful people through working at the Cavendish, good techs, some good performers, you know, great people who work behind the bar. You know, it was a really great place to start and showcase and, you know, put new people up on stage for the first time. So yes, it's an amazing little venue, is the Cavendish. And then the next step, so where we're moving to is called the Roxy Bar and Screen. That's in London Bridge. Yeah. Well, it's close to Borough, so, but it's
sort of between the two.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lovely sort of speakeasy style venue, so I'm very excited.
Totally suits the film noir theme of your next few shows.
Yeah.
But in between that, you were at Battersea Mess and Musical.
Yes, I was. The wonderful Battersea Mess.
Breaks my heart.
Yeah, it's the Four Thieves.
Yeah, it's being refurbished at the moment.
Yes.
But that was a wonderful...
That was a great space. The upstairs was wonderful. It was very versatile. But again, not so much in the technical-wise. I had quite a few problems with tech there. No, because there was no technician who worked there. So we had to. I had to get my technical head on generally for about 2 or 3 hours before the show. So we're running up and down ladders, refocusing lights, trying to make the lights work. That was always fun.
I remember that time we came in, and all that worked were like the strings of fairy lights that were across the ceiling, but the actual show lights weren't working, and we were like, which button do we press? And you were up there. I was like, what about that plug? You were like, no. Like, what about that plug? No, not that one. That's not plugged into the right one.
But every show that went, and what was the real shame about that closing was we were really starting to get a regular following. I always wanted to work with someone because basically it's tough doing it on your own. It's nice to have somebody to work with and bounce ideas off.
Well, every time I did a cabaret show, I co-produced it with you, with the production side of things, just because it was more fun, first of all, to have someone to hang out with when you're thinking about budgets.
Yes,
and it's also just, it takes some of the pressure off. Before we tell everyone all the links and things, because we're running to time, the last question of this podcast, which is, what is the best thing that's happened to you on or backstage, I will say, and what is the worst thing that's happened to you on or backstage?
Best thing that's happened. I think I told that story with the vibrator.
That's your best thing, is getting a vibrator from a co-worker.
It wasn't a co-worker, it wasn't just a co-worker, it was a dwarf.
It was a pantomime dwarf.
It was sneezy. Why not? We'll put that as the best thing, because it was really funny. It was funny. It's one of my favourite stories I like to tell. And it was at a time in my life where I was working in a great theatre, a great time. And of course, you know, plenty of enjoyment afterwards. So yes, I'm going with the vibrator.
What about the worst thing?
No, the worst thing was my final performance in New Zealand, because I was saying goodbye. But then it was also the best performance I had in New Zealand. It was most enjoyable, because I did a putting together of all of the acts that I'd done while I was in New Zealand. So it was a montage, that's the word. Montage, and then I finished with a new routine, which was James Bond, to the Dr. No theme tune. So it was very sad in a way, coming off stage, because I'd had such a wonderful time and really loved everybody who I met and worked with while I was in New Zealand. So in a way, worse. But in another way, fabulous.
Such a cheeky way of answering that question.
I know. I don't think if there is any... I don't like to... there's been plenty of, lights not working and tantrums nearly being thrown because, how are we going to get this up on time? But that's not... I don't want to focus on those because...
None of the... Well,
yeah.
When I was...
Negatives.
stage managing very recently.
Yeah.
Our venue, we started finding Coca-Cola bottles full of yellow liquid around the venue.
Oh.
Some of the cast of one of the shows had been peeing in bottles backstage and just been leaving it there.
Oh, nasty.
There was possibly a nadir when we were like, oh, we're just, you know, just tidying up as you do, as the crew, you know, end of the day, you tidy up. And we were like, and it had been hidden strategically in their set that they'd packed away after their show. So they knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
They knew it was wrong to pee in a bottle backstage and leave it. But they'd hidden it.
They'd hidden it.
This is the Edinburgh Fringe. Edinburgh Fringe, everyone. Find pee in a bottle in your venue.
Yes.
There were, I think, 5 or 6 in total that we found that evening.
Oh, my God. That's awful.
No one would admit to who it was.
That's, yeah.
You'd never find out.
One of life's little mysteries.
That was, yeah. So, you know, that kind of thing. There are a lot of worst moments like that when it's midnight and you're tired and want to go home and you find wee in a bottle and you just want to cry.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, exactly. There's plenty of moments where you just close the door behind you and you, yeah. The face of little Lady Luscious goes and they're kind of like, ah, comes about. But we don't want to focus on those. We want to focus on the good things.
It sounds like more of those have come from stage management than cabaret, though. They've been,
I guess. Well, not saying anymore.
Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me and chatting about your life backstage and on stage. It's an interesting insight you have between the two worlds and how, you know, to run a show, because you've run so many from backstage, what makes that successful, but then also having the insight of a performer, being able to feel that when it runs well.
Yeah, well, I like things to kind of go well. I mean, like, I was never a very well-organised stage manager, but it always went. And that's the aim. So long as it goes up, it's fine.
So, let's tell people where to find you.
Yes.
In the world. So you've got your burlesque classes starting again.
Yes, we'll be at Dance Attic Studios in Fulham. Used to be the old Fulham Baths. On the 24th of September is the next course.
Wednesday.
At the beginners will be at 7:30. So people who've done the course before can come to a class afterwards at 8:30. But 7:30 is the main class. Nearest tube is Fulham, Broadway, and then Overground will be West Brompton.
Great. Amazing. I hear that in your later class there's going to be quite a special guest teacher.
Yes, the guest teacher shall be Miss Trixie Tassels.
Episode 1, Trixie Tassels. I love this woman.
Yeah, she's very cool. I'm very excited about seeing Trixie again and doing a class with I'll get to join in the class. So that's always fun.
So is she teaching 6 weeks or is she just teaching 1 week?
She's teaching 1 week at week 6.
Okay.
And it's looking possible she might be doing the beginners, but we'll that might be announced later.
You heard it here first, folks. Exciting things on the horizon.
Yes, so you can book for that if you pop to my website, littleladylicious.co.uk /booking.
And you've also got the show that we've just been talking about, the film noir themed show, Luscious Cabaret.
Yes, Luscious Cabaret is the first one shall be on October 3rd, that's Friday the 3rd of October. Again, you can book on the website, which is littleladylicious.co.uk /booking. I'm enjoying doing the forward slash. I'm doing an arm movement and everything.
You're doing amazing mime. Yeah. You can't see it because this is radio, but it's amazing.
Yeah. It looks fabulous. So we've got that. And that shall be the first Friday of every month except January until April 3rd. And that's at the Roxy Bar and Screen.
Do you have different themes for each one?
Yes, we're opening with a gangster theme.
So it's all within the film noir umbrella?
Yes. And our second one, so the November theme shall be Femme Fatale.
That's so exciting.
Yes. And the Christmas, we were going to say Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Life because that is a Christmassy film. I mean, we might still call it It's a Wonderful Life, but it's generally just going to be a bit of festive fun, to be honest, on that one. so we may be slightly tweaking the film noir feel on that one. But, you know, it's cabaret, we like to have fun. And then we've got, in the new year, we're doing a bit of romance. And then on February the 6th. And then March the 6th, we'll be doing our private detective themed one. And then to finish off, we shall be doing very best of this run of Luscious Cabaret.
Amazing.
We have some wonderful people lined up. We have Carmen Monoxide lined up to host.
So cool.
We also have the wonderful Michael Twaits lined up to host.
No!
Yes, he shall be doing...
I didn't know that! Mm. Oh my God, I'm so excited!
Yeah, so I'm very excited about that one.
I love Michael Twaits.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Michael Twaits, your life is a very sad life. I'm just telling you right now.
Yeah. And then we have the lovely Gemma Layton.
Yes!
Be hosting too.
Episode 3.
And just to list a few of the people who will be performing throughout, we have wonderful, our resident performer, which shall be the wonderful magician, Dee Riley, who I love to death. He comes in a big storm, does his thing, and goes, he's wonderful.
He's like the Jack Sparrow of magic.
Yes. Yeah, I would say Edward Scissorhands, but...
Maybe a combination of the two.
But Jake, basically Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp's more slightly terrifyingly mental, so less of his like cute quirky and more of his like really slightly unsettling quirky.
Yes.
But also lovely.
Lovely. Very lovely. Do love Dee. So he shall be our resident performer. But we'll also have who else? We've got lovely Lawrence Owen, who's going to be performing at 3 of our shows. Lindsay Sharman, aka Madame Magenta. She shall be joining us for a couple of shows as well. Twins Macabre. I love them. So they're going to be joining us too.
They're exciting.
Yes. I went to see their show in Edinburgh. It was brilliant.
Twins Macabre, very interesting. I wonder how they'll do with a film noir theme.
Ah, well, yes. You'll just have to come along and find out.
Because none of these, when I hear these names, none of them are screaming film noir except maybe Lawrence.
Yeah.
Or maybe Madame Magenta in a very sort of like grand dame of, you know, film noir, the femme fatale kind of, but mental femme fatale.
She will be doing the femme fatale.
Actually fatal, like fatal.
Yes, exactly.
She may kill you.
Exactly, and
but
we have...
all the others, I'm kind of like, ooh.
Yes, some are making up new routines or just adapting what they have already, and we have the wonderful Lady Maiden Voyage as well.
Oh, brilliant. Cool stuff.
Yes.
So cool. So where can people find you? Obviously, your website, which you've mentioned twice now, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Where else can they find you?
Twitter? Yes, Twitter, Little L Luscious. And on Facebook, the Little Lady Luscious fan page. And then we also have a Luscious Cabaret fan page. So just / Luscious Cabaret.
Yeah, Luscious Cabaret, you're going to be posting some exciting stuff. So yes. I highly recommend liking that page.
Yes, do like the page because we'll be posting our performer profiles up there very soon.
So many exciting things happening. Well, thank you so much for a wonderful afternoon chatting over tea.
Yes.
I mean... bubbly wine, like all cabaret people are supposed to love.
Yes, all cabaret stars do. Or a gin and tonic.
Yes, gin.
Gin.
Gin is what makes the cabaret world go round.
Yes, for sure. Definitely.
Gin and glitter.
Yes.
I've been your host, Rosie Cole, yet again. You can find me all over the internet. You can find me at rosiecole.com, facebook.com/ Rosie Cole Dancer. You can find me on Twitter at Rosie_Cole, and you can email me again if you have suggestions about the podcast, comments, people you'd like me to interview. Either tweet me or email me on rosiecoldancer@gmail.com. I'd love your feedback. I'd love to do an episode with like a Q&A from the fan base, so drop me a line.
I'm approachable. Thank you again so much for listening. Audience, as performers, we are nothing without you. So thank you and have a lovely evening.